everyone, to iDeveloper Live episode 29. It's good to be back. It's been a couple of weeks again. I guess we're still not quite back into the full routine from the breaks over the summer, but I'm really pleased to say that my good friend Mr. John Fox is with us as usual. How are you doing, John?
I'm dandy. How are you, Scotty?
I'm doing very well, John. It's back to our old Monday night slot. Thursdays just weren't working out for me. It always seems to something would book something on a Thursday, and therefore the show was getting skipped. So we're trying Monday, although I've just learned that Mondays are going to be difficult for the next few weeks, so that's typical. But how are you in sunny California this morning?
Both of us are in sunny California this morning, I guess, actually.
Oh, well, there we are. He took the California as a cue, because also on the line with us tonight, Neil Tichtin from MacTech Magazine. How are you doing, Neil?
I am good. How are you?
I am good, thank you. And you're in sunny LA. Now, it's no point asking about sunny LA, because LA is always sunny, isn't it?
Not necessarily, but it always seems to be on the very public days. Like the Rose Parade. It's always sunny on the Rose Parade.
So all of us who ever get to look into Los Angeles to always see it as sunny.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Right,
but it is sunny today.
We will come to you and get you to explain to us who you are in just a little bit, but I'm just going to John may be feeling a little bit cut off now, so I'm just going to let him have his chance to express himself.
Because, you know, San Francisco is only in jokes usually sunny California, but apparently, you know, I don't know whether it's climate change or whatever, but we've had a string of very, very sunny days that's made everybody happier. I think they cut off the municipal water supply, delivered antidepressants, so everything's happy.
Okay, it's good to hear your voice again, John, in my ears. It always makes my week a better week, and to put it back at the start of the week means I'll be happy for the whole week. Now, I've got a bunch of stuff to do today, so we're not going to mess around too long, although it's good to see Simon Wolf is in the chat room. He's back because it's Monday night, so we just need to say our traditional hello to Simon Wolf. Of course, Neil has absolutely no idea what's going on there at all, but there we are. Just take our word for it, Neil. It's a tradition around here.
Got it.
Okay. Neil, tell us who you are so people can begin to get an idea of why you're here.
So I'm the editor-in-chief and publisher of MacTech Magazine, and I'm also the CEO of the parent company that does MacTech and Mac News and all of our live events and whatnot. And you asked me to come on the show, and I was thrilled.
Well, it's great. Now, we're going to do a couple of conversations with you, but let's do the first one right now. We're going to talk about the MacTech conference, November in Los Angeles. So first of all, give us the publicity blurb, and then we'll talk in more detail about it.
Sure. So MacTech Conference is November 2, 3, and 4. It's a three-day event in Los Angeles. It's at the Sheraton Universal. It's a good-sized event, but it's hundreds of people, not thousands. Last year's event went exceptionally well, and there's two tracks of the event. One is developer and one is IT. So the type of people that come to the event are either software developers, either on the iOS or on the Mac side, but certainly with an Apple focus, or on the IT side, IT pros, consultants, enterprise, large organization types of folks. And it's an interesting mix of between the two, because they have some different points of views, but a fair amount of overlap actually between them. And this year's keynote speaker is Guy Kawasaki. And the tracks are looking to be awesome. Our two sessions chairs are, of course, yourself, Scotty, on the developer side, and Ed Marczak has on the IT side.
So, I mean, one of the things that makes the MacTech conference, I think, unique, if I'm dissing any other conference, then I do apologize, is the fact that you bring IT and developer people together. Now, you did this last year, and how did you find those two communities mixed?
We find that they mix really well. There's a lot of topics and issues that the IT side share with the developer side, and there are developer issues that the IT folks need to have. And from the same point of view, the developer side of things gets a different exposure to people than they do at other events. They really get a chance to talk to people and form bonds and relationships with people that really might be their customer, or they might know people that would be the customer. They get a different kind of feedback. They see issues about deployment and larger footprints of customer bases. But at the same point in time, MacTech is the second longest running magazine out there, and the only one really devoted to the developer segment. And so in and of itself, as a developer event, it's got great content if you wanted nothing to do with the IT side and only wanted to look at it from the developer side.
Okay, I mean, so that's a good point. So most of our audience are going to be developers. Sure. And they're sat there now, right, saying, okay, so this is a conference and it's for developers and for IT people. So if I turn up, you know, what's this format going to be? What should I expect?
Sure. So the first morning, we're going to do the same format as we did last year since it worked so well. The first morning on Wednesday morning will be a joint session where we get the keynote address and one or two other chats that will be very useful to both segments. And then we break out for lunch, and while that's happening, the rooms get reset, and we have our two separate tracks for all Wednesday afternoon, all day Thursday, our two completely separate tracks, and then on Friday morning, we join back again into the joint session and again cover the overlap types of issues that are interesting to both sides of the audience. And I think that this format works out really well because you get some of the overlap exposure, but most of the time you're spending on your specific topic. And, you know, this is one of the things that makes our event useful and different from other events. One of the other things that we do is just the way the event goes on. We pack the content in very tightly, as Ed Marzak puts it often. We don't really have a schedule per se. We have more of like a set list for a rock concert where one session begins when the one before it ends. And this allows us to really pack in a lot of content tight into the day. There's still time for breaks. There's still, you know, lunch periods. There's great evening activities that allow people to relax and enjoy. But during the day, the sessions are packed as tightly as we can make it happen so that people get the most out of it that they can.
Now, okay, so there's the Wednesday morning and the Friday morning of joint sessions. So, okay, we can send the developers to the website to see what the developer track is, and they're gonna see a bunch of great speakers talking about some, you know, great topics, you know, core animation and debugging, you know, and all good developer stuff. But okay, so maybe the bit that needs to be sold a little bit or to be convinced about is, you know, what are the sessions in the joint tracks going to be? What are the highlights as far as you're concerned?
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that, and most developers don't realize, is that a good IT person needs to have developer skills. They need to understand what are other ways of getting things done beyond just using a GUI and a command line. And so there's a lot of topics that are going to expand the envelope, if you will, or push the envelope a little bit for the IT folks. And at the same time, they'll push the envelope on the developer side. So, for example, last year, we had a great talk about Ruby as a development platform and something that people would be able to take advantage of on either, you know, side of the segment. And that was our second talk that happened during the Wednesday morning after our keynote address. Our keynote address the first time was actually Andy Inako. And, you know, this year, what I think is going to happen is that we're going to talk about the same types of issues that may overlap between the two. And I think there might be some specific fun stuff. Like I believe that we're looking at doing physical computing and making robots as our second keynote address with Chris Rojas. And that's the plan right now. He's from Interactive and has just doing a bunch of stuff with Arduino. And this is something that would be interesting to both the IT and the developer side before we break apart into the different tracks. The Friday morning stuff tends to be a lot more discussion-oriented. Last year we had some really interesting panels. We don't always like to do panels. We try to stay away from them, but sometimes they're incredibly useful to do. And so really we just focus in on what those things are that are a nice overlap and help expand the envelope of knowledge for both sides.
That sounds really cool. I know I'm really looking forward to most of those sessions, and in fact, all of those sessions, not most of them.
Yes,
there are some particular ones that I'm really looking forward to.
You're going to have to switch between the sides there if you want to go to every one of them, right?
And I know, I mean, I've seen Guy Kawasaki speak before, and he's a fantastic speaker. I mean, almost, you know, he's one of those speakers that it really doesn't matter what he's speaking about. He could be speaking about flower arranging. You're still going to be engaged and interested just because he's a great speaker.
Well, what's interesting is that he has a new book called Enchantment. And Enchantment, if you've read the book, and I have, can be applied to almost any situation that you're in professionally, or even, you know, in some of the stuff on your personal side. And what it talks about is how to get, essentially how to get people kind of interested in what you're doing. And whether you're working for if you're on the IT side and working for a large organization and you need to get others to support what you're doing, or you're a developer trying to get people to get interested in your product, or you're just a leader within your company trying to lead a team, all of these things can benefit from what he talks about in Enchantment. And it's a good example of how there's crossover between both the IT and the developer side. You could even use some of the stuff he talks about if you wanted to, you know, lead a volunteer organization in one form or another. You wanted to announce some fundraising event or something like that, and you wanted to get people on board. Enchantment gives you some real tools for doing those things.
It sounds really cool. Looking forward to that one. Now, when we were first started talking about me becoming the developer track chair, one of the things that made me sort of willing and ready to speak to you guys was your sort of, you have this desire for this to be about quality. It's not done on the cheap. It's, you know, it's not just rushed through at the minimum price you can do. It's about, you know, getting it right. So, you know, just share a little bit about, you know, what that means to you as a conference organizer.
So I have a general feeling about how an event like this, a multi-day event in particular, but even our single-day events should go. And I stood up on stage publicly and said this last year, and I will say it again. We as a company believe that if you come to an event like ours, our responsibility is to do four things. We want to fill your minds. We want to fill your stomachs with good food. We want you to have a whole lot of fun. And we want you to basically be exhausted when you go home. And if we do those four things, we've done a successful event. And clearly last year when we did this and took this approach, not only did the event end with a standing ovation, which, you know, is, you might see in a small event, but not one with hundreds of people in it necessarily. But also when we asked our attendees, what did you think about the event? Would you recommend the event to other people? And when 100% of the people, you know, told us, who, you know, filled out the survey, would you recommend the event? 100% of them said yes. We knew we had done something right.
Yeah. I mean, it takes, you know, if someone who organizes a conference and does a lot of things, yeah, that involve, you know, people coming through the door, it's, you know, it's not easy to please everybody.
Right. And all that and it's always fun to do that, but a lot of it is about communication. A lot of it is about attention to detail. A lot of it is from looking at it from the point of view that each of us are when we go to, you know, be a sponsor of an event or go to attend an event. What is that experience like? And if we can make that experience as much as the way we would like it, then we're going to end up with a good event. I mean, and it showed not just in what people said on the survey, but even when we did the survey ourselves. Normally when you do a survey for an event, you might see 5 or 10% of the people respond. In our case, you know, more than a third, almost half of the people wanted to respond to the survey. And they were big questions, you know, a lot of questions with issues about each speaker and each session and things along those lines that we were asking. And when we shut down the survey, we still had people saying, can I give you feedback? I really want to give you feedback on here on how to make it better for next year. And we never saw for an event such a vibrant response. And, you know, clearly it was the way that we put together the sessions and what the entertainment was like and what the food was like and what the service was like and the attention to detail. And that's what we try to do in every event that we do.
Now, I know that we can't talk about a couple of things you're doing because until they're signed on the dotted line, be best
right,
not
right
to talk about them publicly. But, you know, the stuff that goes on outside the sessions is, again, high quality and great fun. Is basically
right.
What people need to know right now, and the details of that will come clear very soon, I believe.
Right, and what I can tell you is that we talk about MacTech Conference being about not just the content and the really good sessions, but it's also about the people and the experience of sharing, building bonds with people and building your network out, not only with people you already know and spending time with them, but also meeting new people. And it's also for the opportunity to find new solutions that might be there to help you, not just on the technology side, but also with the sponsors. The idea is that you may want to get some really good one-on-one questions asked of the sponsors that are there. And the sponsors get to do things in a couple of ways, and they're all meant to make it a good attendee experience as well as a good sponsor experience. So you'll see things like quick talks, as we call them, in between the sessions that are just 5 minutes long, so you get an idea as to what a technology is and whether you want to know more about it. And then you'll have the opportunity to talk with the sponsors during the lunch periods, during the breaks, during the networking events. They're around and they're there to engage with you as much as you are to engage with them. And we know that this part of it works out well for the sponsors as well as the attendees, because the attendees tell us that something close to 95% of the attendees spent one-on-one time talking to the sponsors. So whether it's the sponsor technology, the content technology, the fun that we're going to go do an event on Wednesday night and have a little bit of fun and learn about some stuff that I think we'll all enjoy. And then on Thursday night, we'll do, much like we did last year, some type of evening event that would be a party where you get a chance to, you know, buy a drink and play some games and, you know, let your hair down a little bit, as the saying goes, and really enjoy each other's company. And that's all about cementing those bonds and experiences with people.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on a little bit now, because otherwise I'll get accused of just turning this show into a great big sponsorship event, which is not what we're trying to do here. We're just trying to make sure we educate the developer community that this conference is a little different because of its mix with the IT stuff. And really, I thought, you know, to give the conference a fair deal, we needed to explain why that was. But we have a special offer for iDeveloper Live listeners. Now, I'll post the URL in the show notes, and I'll read it out in a moment, but just explain what that offer is for people.
So basically, as a courtesy from iDeveloper and sponsored by iDeveloper, everybody can get a discount to MacTech Conference, which will save them $100 off of the current registration price. And it's pretty simple. You just go to the link and take advantage of it. There is a limited quantity of these types of slots that are available, but there is ample time to do it. And now is a great time to not only get signed up, but even book airfare. Now is the prices for airfare are at amongst their lowest as they are right now. And, you know, don't think that this is something that you need to be nearby to go and do. Most of the attendees for MacTech Conference come from all over the place. In fact, very few come from the LA area, and less than a third come from California. They come from probably close to 40 states this time and maybe 15 or 20 countries.
That's great. Wow. That's really cool. Right, so that link for you, just in case you can't get to the show notes, is www.mactech.com/conference/special-or-dash, depending on your country, reg, that's R-E-G, underscore Scotty with a capital S, and you will find that, and I'll also post that in the show notes. Thank you very much for that, Neil. We're going to come back to you in a moment, because we're going to have a conversation a little bit about you know, what the IT side of corporations expect from developers, and maybe to help us just understand as developers a little bit more about that. That's great. But I know John needs some help.
I do need help. I'm sad. I'm lying when I said I'm dandy. I mean, I am dandy because every day that I'm alive and have really nothing terrible to complain about is a good day. But I am sad because MemoryMiner is in the Mac App Store review purgatory. It's been there, sitting there since July 29th. And I was wondering if there are other indie developers out there who have had similarly long runs. I know that we had Simon Maddox on some long time ago, and that he was, you know, for his iPhone app was, you know, I think was 8 months or something. But it kind of made sense, since it was something that might have made carriers a little bit upset. I've gone through all the normal channels I can think of sending feedback through the forum and sending a DTS incident, but no response, you know, no response from a human being. So I'm wondering, since when I mentioned this, the problem I've been having with contract problems with iTunes Connect, somebody very helpfully had some advice for me and hipped me to an 800 number that I didn't know about. Maybe somebody has some similar advice out there in the world.
So this isn't, I mean, because you... I know when you were over here, filming the cappuccino course with us back in sort of late July-ish, mid to late July,
yep.
You had a rejection. So you've resubmitted right. since then and just not heard anything.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I had a rejection because of the use of private API, and which was buried in a framework that I found and fixed. And then similarly, because I was writing files to places that are no longer acceptable. And so I changed that, and it immediately passed whatever kind of automated test that they have for determining that, and then was put in review. So it's human beings are reviewing it now. So it's kind of, you know, it makes me nervous, and quite honestly, it makes me kind of really frustrated because it's just been a nightmare. I've been trying to get Memory Miner on the Mac App Store for months and months and months now. You know, the first problem I had was not even be able to get the proper, you know, contract account so that I could actually get paid for it, you know, to get a contract in place where they'd had a name mix up, and it took me having to actually at WWDC, you know, sit in a room with somebody and say, look, I have this problem. Nobody's been able to resolve it. And thankfully they were able to do it. And I just have this feeling that who knows, maybe, you know, it got put on somebody's queue and they have a gazillion apps going in there and it's just languishing. It's incredibly frustrating to not have the software available.
Yeah, so there is no, I mean, there's no recommended course of action to do if it's been sat there this long. I mean,
no, surely, basically they say
people that, have them going through five. I mean, that's 6 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was expecting, you know, my experience with the you know, the, for iOS side was, you know, my first app was you know, approved, and it took about 2 weeks to going back and forth for a rejection for icons that I didn't like, and then it was done. But it was there was always kind of some feedback on it. And in this case, no. The only recommended thing they say is, you know, you can fill out a form. They have a variety of possibilities, and one of which is, can you give me an update on status? So you fill that out, and I just get basically a robo message saying, you know, it takes varying time, you know. We have
so
no more information.
Have you tried rejecting yourself, doing a developer reject and then resubmitting and seeing if that re-triggers the process?
I could. I'm just kind of nervous about doing that because, you know, it just puts it at the back of a queue. I mean, I the whole process is so opaque to me, and I'm sure to other people, because it's, you know, you have these validation tests that take place in Xcode, and that revealed a problem for which there wasn't an obvious solution. I filled out a DTS report, and it took basically 2 weeks to get an answer back because the guy went on vacation. And in the meantime, I kind of got tired of waiting for that answer and found another way around it. And then you submit it, and it has another round of what are, I have to believe, are automated tests where they literally just launch your application and they look to see if, you know, it scans through to see the binary to see if it's using any private API. And then when they launch it, I assume that one of the things it does is to see, A, does it fall over and die on first launch, in which case it's not worth a human being's time to look at it. And I think secondly, they look to see, does it add on startup, write any files to locations that are you know, real soon now going to be quote unquote illegal to write to, you know, like the documents folder versus the application library, you know, the application support folder, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know,
John,
as far as I
was going to say, John, if I could make a couple of suggestions here, one would be that, you know, most people don't realize how much human intervention there is going on the whole app submission and approval process. It's a great deal more human than one may expect it to be, which is often what I hear from people, is that where things get hung up is not on the automated stuff, but it's on the human side of things.
Sure.
And, if, you know, like you, I would be fearful of, call it, restarting the clock with a resubmission. I wonder, and I have to tell you that I haven't done this process myself, and I may be saying something that's not a good idea, but maybe it'll trigger something else. But maybe the idea is to do a slight revision of the app and resubmit the app under a new version number and let it start its new process and see if that helps you in some way in doing it. Or the other thing that you can do is that, you know, within the developer organization, there are two, you know, basically there's the head of developer relations, which is Ron Okamoto, and you could write him an email and try to get to him and see if he can kind of kickstart it along. And his boss is Phil Schiller. It's in the marketing organization for the developer group. And if you were to write a note up that way, that also might be another way to kick it along. And, you know, not anything that's really complaining, just kind of, you know, as feedback, it might be really nice for them to hear 6 weeks is a really long time to not know what's going on. So.
Yeah, those are excellent suggestions, and those are things that I've counted. I mean, I know a couple of people at Apple, and I've tried to kind of go through back channel ways just to be able to, because to be able to find out, is there some technical issues? Because I know that you know, at least for an app like MemoryMiner, which really needs to be able to read files from everywhere just because of the nature of it, and because it uses the iMedia framework, which in turn, is really what's doing the initial reading. It was a big, we had a lunchtime kind of round table about it, people who use the iMedia framework, and a lot of us were really concerned about what does, what do these new permissions based in sandbox world mean for applications. And in the back of my mind, I have this fear saying that, okay, well, they know that there was this, I believe, November deadline where they said you could no longer submit an application that does not use the sandbox. And I was thinking that they were saying to themselves, well, this is going to fall under that, so we're just going to cool our jets until such a time where there's an official policy and then reject it, which would kind of suck because if there's an engineering issue that I need to know about, I need to know about it sooner rather than later. So, but I think the best suggestion is to send an email to one.
I think every time that I've heard about one getting stuck for a long time, it was either just because there'd been a mistake and it had dropped out of the process for some reason and just wasn't going to happen until someone kickstarted it. And I think Neil's suggestions are really good as well. Or it was because actually there was something in the software that they'd not necessarily during a review process come across before, and they were having to wait for someone to make a decision.
Yeah.
And, but again, they're not going to tell you that because that makes it look like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, I think what Neil said, it certainly echoes what I've heard from a lot of other people, that, when Apple created the App Store, the original one, they had no idea what the volume was going to be. It immediately became much higher than anyone had ever possibly imagined, and they're still trying to catch up themselves. And, as I said, I can't begin to tell you how frustrating it is, and it's a particular case where it would be one thing if Apple still maintained their software catalog, but right now, if you're not on the Mac App Store, you hardly exist in the world of software. Certainly for computers. I mean, sorry, for consumer applications where So I don't know. I will definitely take.
A lot of people used to say that the Apple Downloads Store was the biggest referrals I used to have to their website by a long way. But equally, we've been hearing that the App Store sales for developers who've been on there since the beginning were fairly low. But I'm just wondering, we've not really heard anything, or I've not really noticed anything by it to say, has that really improved with Lion, or are we still in that position? You wouldn't know, Jokes. You don't have an app on there yet.
We're definitely still in that position. The problem is that the way that that Apple's model works for both the iPhone App Store, iOS App Store, and the Mac App Store, is that it really kind of makes it very difficult for people to do their own marketing and their own push and their own way of getting stuff out there. And it depends. A lot of people believe that it's all about getting into the store and getting into the listings and getting into the catalog. And those are good things to do. And if you're lucky enough to make one of the top apps, then you're going to do really well because Apple will showcase you. But for the vast majority of developers, the sales are disappointing, and it's because they're not thinking about doing the other things they need to do to promote their app.
I totally agree with that. However, I've heard from some people who have been launching apps recently and saying when they go to pitch it to various bloggers or news agencies, they say, "Great, is it on the App Store?" Because they want one kind of simple path for. One course of action for the people who read, right? Who say, okay, great, I want to try this app. Because I will also say that in my case, I think it's safe to say that 50% of the, if not more, of tech support issues come from the purchasing experience. Downloading it, where did my license, did the license get lost in email as an attachment, or I couldn't install it, or that type of thing. And if nothing else, I was happy just to give away the 30% just to have a very, very simple, no muss, no fuss installation thing. So, I've had this release that I worked on for quite a bit of time, version 2.2, which, adds a bunch of feature, adds a bunch of capabilities. I'm proud of it. I think it's a nice new release. And my feeling, and maybe I'm wrong, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but my general feeling is that for anything that is news, i.e., version X of your software, I can't really go to a news outlet and say, version 2.2, get it from, download it from memoryminer.com, and then come back 2 weeks later and say, hi, Neil, or hi, person X, could you please write about version, my version of software, because now it's on the App Store. In other words, it's no longer news that version X has been released.
Yeah, I mean, part of that, though, is that first of all, PR is not marketing. It's only PR. Sure. Editorial is a great thing, but it's not the only thing by any stretch of the imagination. But the reality is that what's happening for a lot of people is that you're not even getting real, you're not getting a review or a write-up, because most of the media out there isn't even trying the app. And part of the reason that they're not trying the app is because, yes, you can give away a handful of free copies of your app or coupon it in some way to do that. But in the old days, if you wanted to give it before the App Store, and if you have dual versions, one on your website and one on the App Store itself, you'd be able to give whoever in the media a review copy of your software. Now, often when a review needs to get done, you end up buying a gift card on iTunes to send to the media outlet in order to give them the ability to get the app. And it's not a great experience for the media to be able to do it. And so it's making it that much harder for media to be able to get review copies, actually look at software rather than just rewriting the marketing materials and going down that path. So that's one issue. The second issue is that there are a lot of people, and in particular on the IT side, but also really anybody who has, other than that kind of single machine experience, that using the App Store is a real pain in the butt to do as an installation and user experience. If the idea of being able to have a binary with a serial number that you can put on more than one machine, if that's within the license agreement, to do, and to be able to do things in a different way, it's a whole lot easier in the old way to do it than it was through the App Store.
Yeah. Well, that brings up this thing. I mean, first of all, I want to thank people in the chat room and follow up things, because this is all very useful advice and I can act on it. But then that does lead me to ask you, since this is what we were talking about before the show, about how indie developers who are used to dealing with single installs can as easily as possible simulate what an IT install and situation is. But the reason I bring this up specifically is, last spring, I was very happy that I got contacted by Duke University and saying, hey, professor so-and-so wants to have your software in a lab for a course she's teaching. So I was thrilled. Great. So, I put together a quick page that allowed them to buy the license and for the lab. And then when it came time to installing it, there I really myself had no experience, no understanding about how software gets installed in small labs, and similarly kind of how to check for issues that I might not have known about, because I don't run a computer lab here. I have no way of kind of simulating that environment. So maybe that's something you might want to talk about. No?
Yeah, maybe. And it's interesting. somebody just posted a second ago, that sounds like developers almost need to make a standard build with some type of serial number that can be given out to media outlets. And I don't think it's just for media outlets. I think it's given out to any kind of person that falls outside of that very standard Apple model. And I think all of these types of things need to be considered. People can really get a good experience if they have some flexibility in what they do. And the App Store isn't for everybody. You've got two really big products, really important products to the Apple market that have just shipped in the last few weeks that are not able to be on the App Store at all. And that's virtualization. Neither virtualization product, none of the virtualization products by the license agreement can be in the App Store, period. And other people are going to have other types of issues.
So, I mean, what we have here, it sounds to me, is, Apple, I think, have been on a journey for the last 5 years of becoming very much an end user, single user, home user sort of commodity product type of company with the iPod and the iPhone and the iPad. That way they dropped the IT track at WWDC a few years ago, which they say was for space for the iPhone people instead or whatever, but you know, is such, you know, the App Store is very much, as you're saying, it's about the individual, it's not about the company, you know. So as you know, it sounds like to me, if you are responsible for IT in a large organization, you know, or even a medium-sized organization that has a number of Macs around the place, your life has been getting worse the last few years.
Well, I think it's become tougher in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of things that have made it really quite difficult. And it's not just the discontinuation of products like the Xserve and the questions about what's going to go on with macOS 10 server overall. There's a variety of issues that are really that make it really tough for any organization beyond that kind of, you know, individual user. And sometimes this is even families, if you will. And small organizations as well, but any type of organization that wants to do things in kind of that next step up kind of way. And a lot of what Apple has always done is kind of just avoid that set of problems, and people have come up with all kinds of workarounds. You know, so for example, if you're an IT person and you want to have like kind of a standard machine config that you can do, there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through. It's doable, but there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through in order to handle the different models of computers, whether it's, you know, for a netboot situation or an imaging situation or whatever. And a lot of this is simply because Apple, you know, tends to tie specific builds of the operating system, or maybe build is the wrong word, but different types of installs for one machine versus another one. It's tied to the model of computer. And if those things were more general, that would make an IT person's life a lot easier. It would also eliminate a market for a bunch of third-party tools, but it would also make life a lot easier. And there's lots of things like that that not just Apple, but often developers don't consider on the IT side that they can do in order to make it easier for larger deployment or managed deployment of a number of apps or operating systems or versions of software or whatever the case may be.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. So we're here, we're developing software. Maybe it's the type of software that will be great for a small to medium-sized company or even a large company to pick up. They're going to want 10 copies, 20 copies, 50 copies, you know. 1,000 copies. Hey, great. You know, what should we as developers be, if we're trying to hit that market and we want our application to, you know, rate higher in the selection process than our competitors, what sort of things as developers should we be doing?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not just for that type of environment. It might be some piece of software that you might consider to be personal software or educational software in some way that a school is using as part of what they're teaching. And they fall into those types of things, even though you might not think of it as a truly educational or large install piece of software.
Okay, so what should be on our checklist?
Well, That's probably a topic for another day all by itself, because it's fairly expansive and I'm not sure I could do that off the top of my head. And I think it does vary to some extent based on the type of product that you have. This is likely going to come off in the wrong way, but it is exactly the kind of topic that a developer and an IT person would have at MacTech Conference. I mean, I hate to tie that back around, but that's what we saw happening. And, you know, so if you can find that kind of person, you know, to talk to, whether it's at the conference or in your network or whatever, or within your customer base, I would reach out to those people and say, what can we do to make your life easier? How can we make this a better, you know, IT experience for you overall?
Okay, well, I think we are going to drag you back one day to have that. I'm going to be fair to you and give you time to prep, because I didn't give you any warning of that question or this topic.
And frankly, I think what we should do is pull Ed in to do that, because you know, Ed is dealing with these kinds of issues all the time.
That's a good idea. We will do that. But basically, I think, you know, I guess, John, your software, Memory Miner, you know, that's the sort of thing that schools and colleges and institutions, you know, may very well take up. Do you make any consideration to mass install of this stuff, or are you really focused as a single consumer thing?
No, well, that's the thing. It's like, you know,
blog post about that called Academic and Institutional Uses of My Software. And I said, you know, when I created it, I was scratching my own itch, and I really had managed, you know, had in mind individuals. But pretty early on, it was clear that a lot of secondary schools and a lot of higher education environments and institutions like the software and could get use it. And I've given away thousands of copies free to you know, secondary schools and nonprofits. And I'm happy to do it. And it was a very easy thing to manage, you know, relatively speaking, because it's well before App Store and was very simple with the licensing code. And it still is. The thing that caught me by surprise with Duke last spring was that there were things that I had no idea about how it was done, because I never had to. Because, for instance, I use Aquatic Prime, as I know a number of people do. And it involves a license file. And from what I could tell from the way that they set it up at Duke, at least, is that they had disk images, which they would have a user account, and that they kind of clone things so that even if there was a license file that had to live in a specific location, that the contents of the kind of default user's library would be merged with the person who was logging in. In other words, they would log into the network with their credentials, but they could get library, you know, application support files for your application and other applications to run. And I think that they had to do that because that's, you know, they figured out some mechanism for doing that in order for the software to work, and that's how they could manage installations of software that was to be shared. So. But the other thing is that I wasn't aware of is this whole idea of where does the user's home directory live? Right. Because in an application like MemoryMiner, which wants to read and write pretty big files, right? If it's writing it into the user's home folder and that's on a network share, and invariably, you know, what I've been told at Duke and every institution with a large network, you know, it's a network. You know, you might have great connectivity to the server from one moment, and the next moment it's terrible, and then all of a sudden your software is running into trouble. And that's an extremely difficult thing to try and simulate if you don't have access to a lab. And literally what I asked the guys to do, and I was very nice and they were very nice to me, you know, a person who went into the lab, you know, got on iChat so I could screen share and I could run the app and I could look at the console. I was, you know, to be able to see what was going on. But yeah, if unfortunately I can't make it to MacTech, and I'm sad because I very much would like to have this conversation with somebody, and I think it would make a great track. And if there's a follow-on article or if the video or some such thing is available, I would happily buy it. Because I think it's a big opportunity for indie developers that have software that might be of use at for institutions large or small, and it's for me still feels like there's a lot of big unknowns.
Yeah, and I don't want to turn this back towards the MacTech directioning again in there, because we did that amply this morning or earlier, but I think that the lesson to learn from that is that it's not so much about like one general article or an article that would be, you know, in the magazine. Not that wouldn't be a good topic, but there's only so far you can take it. You can lay down some of the baseline stuff. What really needs to happen is that human interaction, whether it's through an event like MacTech Conference or not so much WWC anymore because you don't have that type of IT interaction, but people should be reaching out to their base of customers and looking, you know, just go look through your customer list. See if you can identify the kind of customer that's either buying a lot of seats or is the kind of organization that might buy a lot of seats because there's a good match between what your software does and what they like to do. And unfortunately, there are some patterns that you'll see, but I don't think that there's necessarily any one specific way of deploying out, you know, to a network. Everybody's got their own design for their network, their own set of needs, their own set of issues, and I think that it's important to go beyond just one customer and talk to several different types and see what's going on. There is, you know, there's some stuff going on in the chat room right now where they're talking about, you know, enterprise distributions and App Store for companies and stuff like that. There are tools there, but, you know, once again, they're kind of the typical Apple solution where they solve some problems but not all the problems. And those other problems are where a lot of opportunity can lie sometimes. And it's really about talking with your customers or your type of customer in order to understand what those are.
I think personally, I'm really interested in this, and so I think we will get Ed on because he's, you know, any experience in the IT world doing this sort of stuff to do it. But equally, I'd like to make a shout out there. If you, if you're an individual developer or you're working for a company where you have done specific things in your application to make rolling out large volumes of your application easier for people, and you've done that based on research or something of your customer base, I'd love to get you on the show at the same time and have it, you speak from the developer side and what that meant for you. So if you want to send an email to scotty@ideveloper.tv and just let us know, you know, a little bit about what you did and that you're willing to come on, we'll try and, you know, link yourself and Ed up on the same week, and we will do a show on this. Because I think, yeah, it may not affect a huge majority of our listeners and, you know, people who are doing sort of apps that they, you know, for home use or whatever else, but I think there's enough interesting stuff in there and enough problems in there and probably enough solutions in there that I still think it'll make a good show.
I actually think that it's a much bigger footprint than maybe what most people believe. I think that there's a lot of apps that are used at the consumer level and the individual level that really have an opportunity to be used at the larger organization level. It doesn't necessarily have to be corporate America in order to be a larger organization. There's so many on the institutional or on the educational side that are using a lot of these apps as part of a teaching tool. And often those people have the same kinds of issues. And so I think it is a bigger footprint than what you may be thinking. And I will do a similar shout out in there that if somebody wants to write an article on such a thing, just go check out the MacTech website at authors.mactech.com and submit an idea. And, you know, it is the kind of content we'd like to see as well.
That's been really interesting. I think we've set ourselves off on a track there that we will dig into deeper in the future and hopefully get educated. Neil, it's been great to have you on the show with us. Thank you very much for giving us so much of your early morning over there in California. I do realize, you said to me that you're an early riser, so I guess, you know, 10 a.m. for you, it wasn't too difficult. I know for most of our audience, you know, 10 a.m. as a developer, I mean, it's like, yeah, I doubt we have too many live listeners in California right now, to be perfectly honest. But just tell people a little bit about, you know, where they can find out a little bit more about you and stuff you say or any websites you want to point them to.
Yeah, so I guess a few things real quick. One would be the general website is www.mactech.com. It's MACTECH. And for the magazine, you'll see some of the what we cover in the table of contents and the back issues and things along those lines. And the live events, if you look in our conference and seminars menu, you'll see about MacTech Conference, MacTech Bootcamp, our new MacTech In-Depth series that we just announced this morning, and more information about those types of things there. And if somebody wanted to drop me an email directly, it's publisher@mactech.com, and I'm happy to hear from you.
And do you tweet on Twitter?
You know, I find that it's very hard to have a good conversation with somebody in 140 characters, and I would rather have a conversation with them in email. I do tweet, and I do some stuff, but I would really rather have that more one-to-one conversation with somebody.
Okay. So if you get 7,000 emails, that's your fault, not mine.
That's true, and I'll read every one of them.
I'm not going to encourage anyone to do anything that would be wrong. John, remind us about yourself.
Everybody knows who I am. I did want to have a quick mention of something. You know that a couple of months ago, back when I was in summer, and I had to leave Amsterdam, it's because my mom had a stroke, and I was very happy that everything worked out. We talk a lot about the indie life here, and I want to bring people's attention to something that there's a fellow indie developer, a guy named Christian Miller out there, whose wife suffered an incredible series of strokes, and he's looking for a little bit of help. If you'd like, I would ask that you have a look at vanforjoanne.com,
vanforjoanne.com.
You know, and I tweeted it earlier, and I just will say this. You know, the world has lots of problems right now, kind of environmental and economic and social, and a whole long list of it. And I was really impressed with the whole Developers Against Poverty thing. And I think that I find, at least personally, given the face of troubles that we face, you know, in the world, it's very easy to say, well, you know, the world is just broken and I can't do anything about it. But I think a little bit of kindness goes a long way. And if you're an indie developer out there, you know that sometimes it can be a little bit lonely. You kind of slaving away on something and wondering if anyone cares. And if you have something that turns your life upside down, you know, even just a small expression from somebody else out there in the world saying, "Hey, I care. You know, here's $5. Here's $10. Whatever. You know, give what you can." The expression is as important, I think, as the actual money. So I'm going to paste it in the little chat room, and maybe you can put it in the show notes. And if people can take a look at it, it would mean a lot to me, and I know it would mean even way, way more for Kristen.
Yeah, sorry, John, I started speaking over you. I was particularly speaking over you during the URL, which is Van for Joan. Van for Joan. Joan is JOANNE. I was going to pick up on that as well, so thanks. I mean, you know, I don't want to get into the habit of doing everybody's call-outs and whatever else, but, you know, I think, yeah, just go love, just go have a look and you know, then do what your heart tells you to do, basically. That's what I would say. We hope it all works out for Christian. Just talking about, you mentioned Developers Against Poverty. I love Charity Water, which is a charity we supported last year. It was their fifth birthday recently. And they did a whole bunch of videos thanking people for their donations during the year. And they did one for Developers Against Poverty. And it's on YouTube. I'll put the URL into the show notes. But they, you know, they got the staff from Charity Water, and they, I think they made 250 of them in a day or something. And, you know, it's very personal. They thank Developers Against Poverty, and they thank the Omni Group for their huge donation, and they thank NS Scotland because all the NS Scotland tickets went through there. And it was just made it really personal. So, you know, well done, Charity Water. Great way to treat your donors, and hopefully we're going to do Developers Against Poverty again next year, and yeah, we'll raise even more for you, because, you know, 3,217 people will have clean water that wouldn't have had it before because of developers giving last year, and, you know, I want to make that 5,000 next year, but we'll talk about that another time. I'm Scotty. I'm from iDeveloper TV. You can follow me on Twitter at MacDevNet, and it's been great to be back in your ears, as they say. If you've been listening live in the chat room, then thank you very much for coming along and joining us and adding to the show and giving us stuff to read when we're talking and stuff like this, and to distract us. Very kind. And if you're listening on the feeds, then you know, thank you for downloading us. Please go check out all the places we've been talking about. But until next time, you all take care. Thank you.